I just Googled the phrase tourist versus traveler. 30 million hits. That's 30 million posts on the internet that all say, basically, you know, that tourists go places to buy tacky souvenirs and take selfies, while travelers nobly go, you know, to really connect with a culture. It's not a really complicated distinction, but apparently it's one that a lot of people want to talk about. But what does that difference look like when you apply it to people who go far afield for food? Dr. Lucy Long teaches at Bowling Green State University and is director of the Center for Food and Culture, an independent nonprofit that promotes deeper understandings of food and how it connects everyone. And she has a way of distinguishing two kinds of eaters, travelers and pilgrims. Dr. Long talked with Emily Thomas from the BBC's Food Chain about why that difference matters.
I lived in Spain for a year. Part of what I was doing was studying the food culture. And people kept telling me that I needed to go to the north of Spain during a certain season and try their bean soups. And that every village had their own variety of bean, and they would make these into soup or stew. And people who were knowledgeable about this tradition, they could look at a bean and say, oh, that comes from this particular village. They'd spend a day, you know, maybe a weekend, traveling to these villages to eat these beans. So I did go to one or two restaurants and villages and try these. Now, to me, it was just bean soup. I was eating out of curiosity. I didn't have enough knowledge to fully appreciate the distinctions that were being made. So I wasn't going there as a pilgrim. I was going there as a tourist. I could definitely tell that some of the other eaters were there as pilgrims because they were eating very carefully, they were tasting very carefully, and they were experiencing this on a much deeper level than just eating some bean soup.
What is the difference then between a food tourist and a food pilgrim?
A food tourist tends to be primarily motivated by curiosity about a food, whereas a food pilgrim is very knowledgeable. There's a sense of seeking the sacred and seeking the authentic, but authenticity also tends to mean that it's unmediated by marketing concerns or by trying to adjust taste to different audiences.
Why is it that people seek this out? Why do you think people develop these obsessions for particular foods or restaurants?
That's where looking at this as a food pilgrimage, I think, is helpful. Technically, pilgrimages were journeys that were assigned by the church to people to atone for something. And at the end of their pilgrimage, they were then transformed back into an innocent person. They atoned for their transgressions. Now, I'm not saying that food pilgrims today are trying to atone for any transgressions, but they are seeking some kind of a transformation.
But can you be transformed through that experience? Does that offer them transformation, do you think?
I think that's possible. When you eat food in the context in which that food developed, you start understanding the logic of it. You start understanding why certain choices were made for ingredients or certain preparation methods. You start seeing what that food means to the people in that particular context. You're able to gain a fuller understanding of the food as an aesthetic form, but you also are able to experience as a cultural form, so that it's not just about the taste, it's about the meanings that are being given to it by the people who developed it.
Is there anything wrong with the way that the tourism industry uses people's interest in food, do you think? Is it to be encouraged, these long journeys across the world to experience local cuisine?
Well, food tourism that is done without sensitivity can have massively harmful effects on a food culture, on the host community, the economy, the local environment. So frequently, the tourism industry, in order to attract food tourists, focuses on finding dishes or ingredients or ways of eating that are very different and considered very exotic, that frequently then exoticizes the whole culture. It takes foods that are not necessarily the most representative foods of a culture, but because it's different for the tourist, that's the food that's highlighted. A good example of that is you go to Peru and have llama meat. It is something that is eaten occasionally in Peru, but the restaurants that are catering to tourists is featured on their menu. You know, so now people are thinking, oh, okay, the national food of Peru is llama.
Does this have economic effects when one food is emphasized above another for tourism?
Yes, yes. It can end up changing the local economy. If there's a food that is generally used just for celebrations, for example, and now there's much more of a market for it, you know, then farmers end up shifting from growing one food to another, producing that food just for the tourism market. And then it shifts the whole economic commodity chain in that way. It can also have massive environmental impacts if local farmers are going into monocropping, you know, raising only that one thing. That can be very, very bad for the environment. Overfishing happens, over-harvesting of things, you know, just for the tourism market.
So there can be irresponsible food tourism, but can there be irresponsible food pilgrimages?
Probably, yes.
So how to be a responsible food pilgrim or a responsible food tourist?
I think, first of all, recognition of the complexity of food, that food itself carries people's identities. It carries their histories. So if you're consuming a food purely for its aesthetic qualities, that's fine. You know, but when it comes to then creating a market and emphasizing that particular food over others, we need to be aware that these are identities that are being traded off.
Lucy Long is director of the Center for Food and Culture. Emily Thomas is the host of the BBC's The Food Chain. Now, I love that idea, the food traveler and the food pilgrim. Because it's fascinating to think about what draws those pilgrims to having such deep connections to particular foods. But, you know, what I also really liked is how Dr. Long isn't really about judging people for being one and not the other. It's just about recognizing that we always have some level of responsibility when we're eating other people's food. Like the thing about people thinking llama meat is the national food of Peru sounds kind of funny at first, but you know, it's one thing to be interested in the unique elements of a cuisine and another to fixate on those things and to end up making the people of that cuisine seem cartoonish or alien, like how dog eaters is basically a racial slur against Asians. And I was really struck by the way that Dr. Long talked about how travelers can influence the market for the foods of a culture. Now, have you ever heard the story of how acai became this huge health food thing in America? It basically goes like this. There were a couple surfer dudes from California who vacationed in Brazil. They were introduced to acai as a local food, and they started a company to export it back to the U.S. They made a ton of money, and lo and behold, the value of acai skyrocketed. So much that many of the local people in Brazil couldn't afford to eat their own staple food anymore. And quinoa is another example of that. So, you know, I'm not here to say if that's right or wrong because it's complicated, right? Like, on one hand, you have the jobs that a new industry creates, and on the other, you know, you have people who can't afford to eat the food they grew up on. You have the things that people can now sell for money, and you have the idea that maybe not everything should be for sale. But I guess what I'm saying is, it's on us. If we're the tourists and the travelers and the pilgrims, it's on us to remember that when we travel, we're guests in someone else's culture. Because a culture is like a home, and even as customers, we're still in someone else's home.